Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Bruce, they closed the show with Chris Jericho, or Chris Jericho closed the show, guaranteeing that he is going to stretch John Moxley next week and become champion. Is that a like Vince McMahon-style guarantee? Is he going to walk out as champion next week, or is that just the heel breaking? Like, should we read into that at all? What do you think the odds are they do a title change if, for instance, they have in mind, like, Punk coming back and wanting him to beat Jericho for the belt, or just giving Moxley a rematch against Jericho, or otherwise, just throwing those out there?
There's always a chance in professional wrestling, of course, but I think it would be promotional malpractice for them to make that decision here and now with Moxley just being so hot as the champion. One of my colleagues called him the heart and soul of AEW, sort of like Tanahashi, the ace over in New Japan. He just carries that brand. I do think that at times his promos and his matches go a little too far for my liking. That's my preference. But I think for AEW, you want to keep it on Moxley right now. I do think the story of Jericho getting this rematch against the person who took the title from him in the first place, as Jericho was the first champion, and then having to channel something else to try and regain that title, which was telegraphed by him locking in the Lion Tamer to beat Wheeler Utah tonight instead of a regular Walls of Jericho or Hit of the Judas effect. Adds another layer to this story that I think I wouldn't be as excited for this match if it was just going to be regular Chris Jericho, even JAS Chris Jericho against Moxley, channeling the Heart Dungeon, channeling his lineage there, and, you know, calling back to the character that really brought him to the forefront of a lot of wrestling fans' minds in the late 90s. I think that's a good call here. Now, I also think that the bigger money match is having Punk return against Moxley. I don't care about babyface, heel versus heel to me. Those are, you can do those when the wrestlers, the personalities, the stakes involved are there. And I think this is one of those times where the stakes involved doesn't need either to be a heel. And you can have the unification bout between those two, where Mox may lean a little heel during the match because his style is a little more aggressive, but in the end, it's more of a mutual respect kind of thing. And so I think that's the ideal path that Tony Khan has laid out for this interim title and John Moxley as the interim champion.
I agree. I think it would be a mistake to give the title to Jericho at this time. I'm saying fully because I'm like, do you even ever give him the title again? Like, is it, are you getting a little more out of him here? And I think this is good use of him to have him in a title match next week on Dynamite. It should draw a good rating. But I don't think Jericho as world champion is something people want to see right now. I don't think that's where AEW is. And I get the sense Tony Khan realizes that. I don't know either way about Jericho. He probably does too, you know, at 52 or 53 years old now. Nah, come on. You know, they've got other options. And he wants to stay strong, but it's his time to basically put over the champion and primarily be there to pop a rating now and then, be in a second or third or fourth from the top pay-per-view match and help elevate other people and just, you know, fill TV segments entertainingly. And I think Matt Menard and Angela Parker have been a fresh group for him to be around. And when Sammy Guevara gets back from his excursion, his wedding, he'll be back in the mix. So I thought they did a nice job building the matchup, though. And Wheeler Utah, let's talk about him for a minute, because he just main evented Dynamite. Like, I mean, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, Wheeler Utah against Chris Jericho feels like a match, you know, a middle of the hour match on Rampage that Jericho just wins, but Utah puts up a good spirited underdog fight for, you know, 4 minutes before Jericho finishes him. They have moved Wheeler Yuta into a different spot. Is Wheeler Yuta a good choice? I have absolutely, like, nothing but admiration for his ring work and the fan popularity that he's earned. But if you're AEW, are you going to, and Are you going to grow with Wheeler Yuta being a main event babyface for you? And I ask that without an agenda other than I want your opinion. I'm not trying to sway you either way. It's just, to me, it's notable, and maybe the answer is it's yes, the fans love him, and this is a testament to Tony Khan's booking. Or maybe the answer is, yeah, the crowds are reacting to him, but they're pushing him beyond the perception of him. Nobody really thought they were going to headline Dynamite next week with Yuta against Moxley, and it really wouldn't be a fair fight.
Sure, and it's interesting you bring that up, because as I saw that was the main event, that thought actually crossed my mind, like, huh, Wheeler Utah versus Jericho as the Dynamite main event. Does that ring Dynamite main event to me? The match itself was fine. And I also might not be the best person to ask this, because for a while, in a bit of wordplay, whenever something in wrestling really struck my chord, I would say that it was right in my wrestling Wheeler Utah instead of a wheelhouse. So, you know, Wheeler Utah is someone I do like and I appreciate. I knew that the outcome was going to be Jericho because of all the things that were built in, although I would have liked to have seen sometime, you know, maybe not next week, but down the line, a Moxley versus Utah match and just see another one, you know, just keep going, because I think might have been Excalibur when Utah was making his entrance mentioned that he's had one of the biggest rises over the past 6 months, and that alludes to what you were talking about earlier. And that kind of a rise doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. I mean, he just got the main event after all, and he's still a champion for Ring of Honor. So, you know, they probably have bigger plans from down the line. Now, do I think he's going to compete for the interim title, world title by the end of this year? Probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised if by this time next year, he is number one contender for the world title because of how it's not just that they've been building him as the ROH Pure Champion and having these competitive matches even when he loses, but he's being associated with one of the top two or three acts on the card, not just because Moxley's the interim champion, but that stable in itself is one of the top acts on the card. And I think that kind of a rub is going to do wonders for him. But to your point, I don't think that every episode of Dynamite or Raw, SmackDown, NXT, which I cover, has to be main evented by a match that would be, say, for a pay-per-view or some high-quality thing. You can have sometimes where it's to steal something from Stephanie McMahon, you know, a B-plus show. And I think this was fine, considering that they have not just Rampage, but Battle of the Belts also on Saturday. I think it may have been a smart idea to not get so much emotional investment out of the fans done on Wednesday, as opposed to the big event on Saturday, which has many more title matches, and the wind is really blowing here in Hawaii.
Oh, you had to rub it in. You're in Hawaii, but it's nice and windy. That seems like a good time to actually pause and introduce ourselves here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. We have been covering professional wrestling at the Torch for over 30 years, and it's great that you are here with us tonight as we cover tonight's Dynamite. Joining me on today's show is PW Torch contributor Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, from Hawaii, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Wade. It's been a while, and I'm glad to be able to talk to you again about professional wrestling and what turned out to be a pretty good episode of Dynamite, regardless of what we thought about the main event.
Yeah. Well, I like the main event.
That
helped make it a good show. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was an overall good show. I want to give the phone numbers out or the phone number and the email so people can participate in the show. It's a short line on the phone banks tonight. I didn't think tonight was a particularly controversial show, but this is a good time if you have called in to push one if you don't want a long wait, as long as we don't get, you know, 10 people do it at once. And then it's a, you know, who knows how long your wait will be. And you can also call us if you haven't yet. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you on our switchboard so we know that you want to actually be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can always find the live stream to the show, by the way, after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, by going to pwtorch.com and clicking on my TV report with details and analysis of what's on each of those shows as the shows progress. And at the top and bottom of that written report is a link and the phone number and the email to give you all the information you need to stream live and participate. You can also go on Twitter at PWTorch and find the information there, or just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the live show link. So many ways to find us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night within about 5 minutes, give or take, after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Tyler Sage, PWTorch contributor and often a co-host here on the Dynamite Post Show and the host of the Rampage Post Show, a VIP exclusive. He is expected to join us later on this program as the on-site correspondent. So we look forward to hopefully hearing from him if all goes as planned. Bruce, before we move on with our conversation and calls and emails, tell people about your current contributions to PW Torch. It's been a while since you've been on with me in particular on a post show.
Yeah, thank you, Wade. So I am one of the rotating live reporters for NXT 2.0 on Tuesday night with Kelly Wells. And then after the show ends on Tuesday, about 20 minutes or so, I join Kelly and Nate Lindberg for the PWT Talks NXT post show. And we take callers and live emails in a format just like this. The phone line is different. It's the same line as Wrestling Night in America. I don't have the line on the top of my head, but it's that line. And then the email address is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. So if you have any questions throughout the week or watching the show, let us know. There is another themed episode of NXT coming up soon called Heatwave, I believe in 2 weeks. So a lot of things building to that in terms of title matches, angles, breakups, etc. So join us every Tuesday. I will be back. I wasn't there last Tuesday as we just finished a move into the town of the city. We call it town over here, of Honolulu, and I didn't get internet set up until yesterday, just before NXT. But I will be there next Tuesday, rejoining the squad, and we will talk NXT as we build to Heatwave.
Tell me, by the way, what the best and worst part right now of NXT 2.0 is for people who have been out of the NXT loop lately. And mm-hmm. and secondly, how do you think NXT in its current incarnation would be competing if the shows were the same head-to-head right now with what AEW is producing? Would the gap be larger or smaller or about the same as it was last time that they had a stretch of Wednesday nights head-to-head?
Well, to the second question, the current iteration of NXT would be slaughtered by AEW in the ratings that they're going head-to-head. The shift was strong, and so I'm going to qualify my first my answer to your first question in terms of the worst thing about it. It's also to be expected. I've been a fan. I've long been a fan of developmental. I was always interested in the up-and-coming wrestlers. One of the things that drew me to NXT in the first place was the chance to see these wrestlers who are developing and see their stories. And you get to see, you know, Seth Rollins go from what he was in NXT to what he is now. You get to see Roman Reigns go from the dude who's out there looking like really just Jason Momoa to now the universal, the undisputed unified champion who has the fourth or fifth longest reign in WWE history. There are things like that. And then you get to see, you know, transformations like Bayley from the hugger to Bayley right now. And then, you know, some of the failed acts, whether it's because they didn't mesh well or WWE failed them or they got in their own way. I've always been a fan of that. So the worst thing is that they're still putting people on TV in too long of matches when they don't have the requisite skills yet to be in those matches on national TV. Part of that was that the pandemic hindered them from having what they call live shows, but they've been going back to doing the Coconut Loop recently, and so that's going to help a bit. The best thing about NXT 2.0, to me, without a doubt, is Carmelo Hayes. He is, to me, going to be people peg Braun Breaker. If it was me, Carmelo Hayes is easily the answer to the question, who would you rather have, Braun Breaker or Carmelo Hayes? He just is so much more smooth and comfortable when it comes to every facet of the game and professional wrestling to me. If you're talking baseball, he's the quintessential five-tool player. He's the anomaly. I think Carmelo Hayes has all it takes to and will become someday a top champion in WWE. He is undoubtedly, to me, the best part of NXT right now.
Very cool. I'm glad I asked, Bruce. So check that show out. Search PW Torch in your podcast app. whatever podcast app you use for this, the Wade Keller post shows, just search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. That is a free podcast with a, as the name suggests, a daily show. And the NXT show drops on Wednesdays. We also have shows covering the indie scene and AEW and on and on, just a whole variety of shows with different formats. The PW Torch 90s Past Cast is the latest addition to the Daily Cast lineup, looking back at a back issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter from 30 years ago this week. Lots of cool shows on that lineup, and I encourage you to check them out. They are free. And when you search PW Torch, you'll also see a gray and black logo pop up that says PW Torch VIP. You can subscribe to that for free and get free samples of PW Torch VIP exclusive shows. And if you're if you subscribe on Apple iPhone, you can, using the native podcast app, if you subscribe to that free feed, you can also upgrade to the full array of VIP shows and have free versions of this just by paying within your Apple account by hitting the upgrade or the subscribe button. So we made it easier than ever for iPhone Apple Podcast users to go VIP and get all our VIP shows. So check that out. All right. So as I said, line is short on the phone bank. So give us a call if you got anything to say about tonight's show or AEW in general. The number again, 347-215-8558. I have a lot more I want to get to. I even want to expand on our talk about Moxley and Jericho. We're going to start with Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what have you got for us on tonight's show? And good to talk to you.
My first question is on these gimmick matches AEW's been doing, and they did a dumpster match tonight. What do you think the next big gimmick match will be that's new that they've never done before will be? Will it be like a Buried Alive match with Darby Allin, or will it be a utter match, do you think?
Man, I couldn't even begin, Bruce, to predict what the next gimmick match will be, but it is, it's not something Tony Khan is shying away from. I am curious if Paul Levesque, Triple H, if he leans into or away from gimmick matches. And it's actually kind of a good question for you and a good time to have you on now that you're covering NXT. You know, during the Triple H era, would you have gotten the sense from his leadership during the TakeOver era that he would do a lot of gimmick matches, or that he'd be more about the fundamentals compared to AEW? So first question, any idea of what feud might prompt another creative gimmick match? And then second, do you think Paul Levesque is going to do more of them, not necessarily to compete with AEW, but just because that's his tendency?
Sure. So to the first question, I think AEW is strongly hinting that Darby Allin and Brody King is going to be a coffin match or a casket match, however you want to signal that. Though, if that doesn't happen, I guess they could take a page out of WWE's book and go with some kind of a scaffold match or some kind of like tractor trailer match using that tractor that Brock Lesnar used at SummerSlam. To the second question. So the gimmick matches weren't heavy, but they were there. And generally, if my memory serves me correct, in NXT, Triple H would schedule gimmick matches based around big pay-per-views. So War Games, you would always have a ladder match to determine which team would have the one person advantage during the match. I believe that not necessarily gimmick matches, but there would be a lot of multi-person matches in terms of qualifying, other things like that. The North American Championship is kind of had a place of having a ladder match at once a year or so on the big PLEs now, with at least six people. That's how the North American Championship was actually introduced to NXT, was a six-person ladder match, I should say. So what I hope they do, though, is because of that, you know, get rid of the gimmick PPVs, and I think that will help loosen up the creative strings a bit for Triple H. I just think back to 80s, I think it was All Japan, when they stopped doing countouts, disqualifications, run-ins, and just did straight finishes, their viewership, their revenue, it shot up, and they didn't do another one of those kind of finishes for something like over a decade. So it works. It can work. We have just been conditioned so much that we can't really have that. So, yeah, I'm just hoping that these gimmick matches go away in general, but Tony Khan has shown a propensity to schedule gimmick matches even when there's no need to have a gimmick match. So at least in AEW, I don't think that there's going to be any diminishment of gimmick matches scheduled for any show, even if it's a Rampage. I don't watch Dark and Elevation, but I'm assuming they've had gimmick matches there too. So in AEW, it's part and parcel of being of watching the show.
The dumpster match tonight, before we get back to Ryan, I thought it was fine for what it was. You know, sometimes a gimmick match is more playful than vicious. It certainly can be, and tonight was one of those. Although, I when the dumpster got tipped over, I was like, I hope they didn't actually keep the guys in there. And because when the thing landed, I was like, someone could have just been, like, chopped in half by the edge of that. So I figured they knew what they were doing, but at this moment of, oh, my God, it's that cardboard box, one of the gun boys. But what was this of one of those categories where it's like, it's kind of fun to have a gimmicky match, drop them in the trash because they're the trash boys. It totally works. Or does it diminish gimmick matches when you have a comedy tag team match just to, you know, have a gimmick match?
So thing I just said, and make that a macro comment. And the micro with this match, I think it was fine. One reason is it is entertainment, and I was thoroughly entertained watching the match. They did enough high-risk spots that it added a sense of seriousness to it that I don't think would have been there if they just went the comedy route, which they kind of did a little bit too. But I think there was enough there in terms of the physicality department that it passed there. But also, this is something that has been brewing for months, and it's not just a dumpster match thrown out of nowhere. It goes with them calling the guns the trash boys. They were attacked and then they imploded. I mean, there was a lot working here that this kind of this match itself basically puts a period on their rivalry, and they can move on. You know, I've been very high on Anthony Bowens, much higher than I think a lot of people. I've told people repeatedly that if I were to start a promotion, he'd be one of the first five people I would sign to my promotion, because I'm looking at the future, and I think he is someone that I would love to have my company build a future around. And I think Caster is talented in terms of his promo and mic work. I'm not as thrilled to his in-ring work, but I like them as a pair, though I think Bowens has more potential as a single star. I think this gimmick match was fine because – so I said it was a good show. There was nothing spectacular on the show, but there was nothing bad or offensive about the show, aside from maybe Jungle Boy's shirt. But beyond that, it was there. It had a purpose. I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of gimmick matches in AEW don't have a purpose or a reason for being there, but this one did. So for that, I'll give it a pass.
Yeah, if just kind of stepping back to talk about the show, if Tony Khan judges whether he has a successful night based on social media reaction, outrage, OMGs, gifts, like, he's going to think this was a bad night.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was a bad night. I think this is a good show to have. It was... I don't know if maintenance show, sometimes that gets overused, because Tony Khan doesn't do maintenance shows. There's always developments. I mean, we had a match to determine who will challenge for the world title next week. That's a major development, not maintenance. But it didn't feel like he went into this going, this is going to be one of the more memorable shows. It just was a good show. It had some. It almost felt like it could have been a pre-tape back in the days where they would tape every week. Because we had more video packages. Yeah, and you know we had good vignettes and a good mix of interviews, an in-ring interview with a big angle, which we'll talk about, some vignettes,
actual
some sound
video
bites,
recaps, that's
video
exciting.
Recaps of key moments. Yes, and
yes,
it wasn't overdone. It's that absolute happy medium that I think is valuable and sort of just obviously worth doing. You know, I mean, especially with the viewership for Rampage dropping so much lately. You know, you really can't assume knowledge. And, you know, Tony's got to take himself out of the position of booking shows based on the fans who saw everything and start thinking about the two-thirds of the fans, you know, who haven't seen everything, you know, other than – haven't seen anything other than Dynamite, frankly. So, yeah. All right, anyway, Ryan, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up or another topic.
Another topic I have is on Eddie Kingston. I was supposed to see him over the weekend on – International Wrestling Cartel, but he canceled due to injury. But tonight he looked like he was doing pretty good. So do you know what the status is of Eddie Kingston's injury?
No, but I mean, he only cut a promo, right?
Yeah, he only cut a promo, a very good promo, but a promo nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the latest on him. Have you seen anything, Bruce, on that?
Yes, actually, just before we came on, House of Glory Wrestling tweeted that for the first time ever, Eddie Kingston is going to face Noah Marufuji August 28th. If you don't know who Marufuji is, he's a Japanese legend. And I posted in a couple of Slacks, and the reaction has just been overwhelmingly shock, but positive shock, but positive shock, because it's just like, really? So that match isn't taking place until the end of the month, however, so he may still have some lingering effects, but he's healthy enough to be scheduled for a match in about 3.5 weeks.
Cool. Ryan, what else have you got for us?
And that marriage that they're doing on TV with Ty and Sammy Guevara, do you know if that's they're legitimately getting married sometime down the road, or is this mostly a storyline thing that they're doing with their romance?
I was wondering that too, and I don't know if they made it clear on social media or otherwise if they really are getting married. My assumption is they are, but it seems a little rushed, Bruce. I'm not going to give advice to them. I mean, teach their own. Do you have any idea?
Wade, this might shock you, but I don't scour the wrestling Twitterverse or anything like that 24/7. But it wouldn't surprise me if they already did get married and kept it hush hush, and they are using this to have an angle. Or that they're legitimately going to have an ordained minister there, or whoever they're going to have to wed them on TV. And if that's what they want to do, then you know what? You only live once, I guess, and they're young. Let them do what they want to do and learn from their mistakes and or triumphs.
And if I'm Ty Conti, I get married as quick as possible because, you never know who's going to show up and replace her.
Ooh, that's a deep cut there.
All right. I'm just, you got to learn from the past. All right, Ryan, I appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks for taking it.
Sure thing, yep. All right, we'll go next to Greg in Kansas City. And again, a reminder, you can call us 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad like Ryan and Greg have done so far. Greg, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, good evening. I have really only one quick topic to bring up, and that is the women's tag team match tonight on Dynamite. And I couldn't help thinking that two things stuck out about it to me. Number one, it was in a prime placement in the first hour of the show rather than the usual designated slot that the women's division sometimes seems to have just before the main event in the middle of the second hour. And two, performers in the match all worked very hard, and the crowd reacted to it really well. So I thought this was a positive development. And I wonder, in the back of my mind, I can't help but wonder, is this at all a response to what we've seen in WWE over the last several days with the big development and the new treat, the new stable, and all of the positive goodwill that's come out of that. And so I thought this was a good night. And this is a time when you really want to build on this division. I thought this was a good start because it was a good match and the crowd responded to it really well, and they're promoting Madison Rayne coming in as a debut. I don't know how big of a deal she's going to be, but it seemed like there was more of an emphasis in terms of the placement of the match and the way the crowd reacted to it. So it's really all I had. I just wanted to bring that up and just in the discussion of, like, is this at all AEW responding to what we saw in WWE this past week? And that's really all I had to say.
All right, Bruce, I'll throw to you for a response to Greg first.
Even if they say it's not, there's always a bit of lingering in the subconscious of what your competitor just did. And we saw, a great SummerSlam, a fantastic match with Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair, and Lynch really fighting through that shoulder, separating early in the match on that glam slam. So, and then everything that happened with, you get the return of three high-level workers in Bayley, Io Sky now, and Dakota Kai. And it's not just that they're high-level workers. They understand how to be characters. They understand how to put forth the passion and charisma. They understand how to do psychology. So you have to change it up if you're AEW. They've been getting the criticisms about their women's match placement since the beginning of the promotion, basically. And it's nice to see them switch it up. This was it wasn't the cleanest match, but it wasn't the cleanest match in the best way possible, because they were really working pretty snugly in there, laying it in. A couple of those cross bodies from Toni Storm onto Jamie Hayter landed pretty high. I was scared that she may have landed on Hayter's face, but she seemed to be okay. They were, you know, Rosa and Baker were really, you know, they've had their matches, and so they know each other very well, and they're really laying into each other. So it was good from that perspective. I was surprised at the outcome of the match, that not only did Baker and Hayter go over, but that Hayter was the one to get the pin over Toni Storm, I believe it was. So there's a lot of moving parts here, and I like Hayter. I think she can do more than they've been giving her. So maybe this is the start of a little push for her, and maybe this leads to that dissension they were teasing so much between her and Britt Baker. Long ago, maybe it finally leads to some kind of implosion and a rivalry between the two.
And Hayter winning the tag match was a good, it made sense that they did that, given that they announced she's getting the match against Thunder Rosa on Battle of the Belts. And by the way, Battle of the Belts, Thunder Rosa defending against Jamie Hayter, Wardlow challenging Jay Lethal, and Claudio against say it for me, Bruce. I can say it when I'm not on the air. Then I just freeze up of panic.
It's Konosuke Takeshita.
I knew you could do it.
Yeah. I took 3 years of Japanese in high school. Yeah. I'm also Korean, and there, you know, a lot of history with Korea and Japan. So it comes a little more naturally for me than you would.
Now, absolutely. Do you think it is that AW and Excalibur have a good pronunciation of that? Because people have been calling it for
never.
Gotcha.
One thing is they tend to change the pronunciation by show. So
No
consistency.
So say it again twice for everybody, because we can change the world here, Bruce. We can get the world saying this the right way. I can loop this and practice.
So, you know, I tend to say things a little more technically because of how it's taught in Japanese class, but it should be Konosuke Takeshita. Again, Konosuke Takeshita.
Konosuke Takeshita. That's what it should be.
Yes.
All right. See, that's kind of the instinct is Takeshita, and they just complicated it for us.
Yeah, it's Excalibur does his best, but he also I just want Excalibur to post his breathing exercises because I need to know what he does to get through those hype segments every single week.
Yes. By the way, were you? I bet a lot of people were blindsided by a Battle of the Belts special this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like what? There's a Battle of the Belts? I mean. That when they first announced that they were going to be doing Battle of the Belts, I thought, oh, it's like Clash of the Champions. It's going to, you know, pay-per-views every 3 months in AEW roughly. So this is going to kind of break that up. Maybe we'll have major events every 6 weeks, which will give them a good booking rhythm. And they'll book these quarterly specials kind of smack dab in between major pay-per-views. They won't be at major pay-per-view level, but it'll feel like a big deal. And instead, we get 3 days notice. And three quick title matches. And, oh, yeah, one of them is an ROH title. And, anyway. I mean, it's just like it's not living up to the WCW Clash of Champions legacy, I'll put it that way. And not that the matches won't be good and the lineup won't be good, but, you know, I mean, it does feel like an afterthought from Tony. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's filling in the it's following up It's fulfilling the name of the series by having belts being battled over. Like, that's about as far as you can go with it.
Yes. There is no build. There is no storyline I'll say all three matches. It's just, it's there to be there. And I don't necessarily know if it has to be there at this rate. So, and if that's a question going through the mind, then I don't think it's a positive thing for Tony Khan.
Yeah. Yep. All right, very good. If you want to get in line on the phone lines, you can. We're going to go to Tyler Sage momentarily here, our on-site correspondent, but we can go to you afterwards if you so desire. 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad. Or if that's not convenient, but you still got thoughts on tonight's show or anything we've said so far, you can email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Tyler Sage, welcome. Our on-site correspondent tonight. Good to hear from you. How's it going?
Hey, good. It's good to be here. I'm in my basement, so I've made it back home. No call from the car. So the benefit of living in Columbus is that you can get home within 15 minutes. So
now, when is Rampage taped?
I think Rampage is tomorrow, or is it doing? It's in Grand Rapids is where they're taping it. I think they're doing a Rampage and Battle of the Belts taping together. I might have that wrong, but yeah, there's no Rampage tonight. Yep.
I wasn't even looking at the schedule. I just sort of assumed you would be calling in after Rampage, so you were able to call us earlier, so that's good. Although you don't have Rampage spoilers, or do you? Do you have a crystal ball? Can you give us Rampage and Battle of the Belts spoilers?
I don't know. It actually looks like a good show from what I saw there in person, so that's a nice improvement from the last couple of weeks. But no, I don't have any crystal ball for you.
Yeah.
Well, John Moxley is defending on Friday against Mance Warner, so that's going to be a fun match.
Yeah, very fun. Mance had a dark elevation match where he beat Serpentico, so I was like, oh, this is weird, but that makes more sense now in that booking.
Well,
for Dark Elevation.
Yeah, there's some people just throwing
I know.
Their phone against the wall right now. What did Tyler Sage do without a spoiler warning? maybe Serpentico's family. That's about it.
Yeah.
Had hope. We had hope. Okay. So, Tyler, first of all, just kind of give you two this. You know, you're familiar with the process.
Mm-hmm.
What stood out to you about the live experience, and then we can kind of do a roundtable running through some of the topics that Bruce and I haven't covered yet. But what's your top takeaway? What was it like in the building? What stood out?
Yeah, I would say macro. So I went to the Bash at the Beach or whatever the equivalent was in Cleveland in January or February, the show that had the Orange Cassidy and Adam Cole lights out match. And I would say just the production value increase in the 6 months for the live experience, it was very noticeable to me. There were screens everywhere, and it might be the arena size, and it's a pretty big arena. This is usually hosted WWE events, but you know, for example, the dumpster match, I couldn't, you know, if I didn't have screens to watch it, I couldn't have seen anything from where I was sitting in that match, and I could enjoy the whole match on the screen. So that was an improvement, and you know, typical environmental stuff with Justin Roberts and the post-show stuff. But and then micro, I think, you know, the Columbus crowd, I don't know how it came across on TV. I think usually it's a pretty tepid to bad crowd in general from when I've been to events in Columbus. And I thought the crowd was pretty good in general. So that was a micro, you know, thing just for me personally. But just shows there's kind of a different audience for AEW versus maybe WWE of the past, you know, and for the next couple months. But you know, very few families, same song and dance as usually here. A lot of, you know, white guys in their 30s and 40s. So that was my demo for everybody.
That's everyone
but,
who was
yeah,
in
I mean,
Judas, basically.
Yes. So, you know, I did see they got the probably the only kid there was the one that was crying during the breakup angle. But I'm glad the camera guy found that. Kind of the overall all take from the live experience. It was good.
Very good. Well, let's march through the show and hit some specifics here. First of all, spoiler alert, anything else from the taping before Dynamite went live?
Not really. They taped Elevation and then just did stuff to hype the crowd. And then there was a post-show angle for the live audience I can get into. I mean, it involves QT Marshall, so it doesn't really mean anything. But just Blackpool Combat Club kind of getting one over on him and QT doing his heel stuff, calling, you know, doing the sports, you know, boo the sports, local sports team, all that stuff. So I'm sure it's on, you know, Squared Circle or something if you want to watch it, but nothing to, you know, gave Yuta and Blackpool Combat Club their heat back after losing. So
did Tony
come out? And then, yes, Tony came out before, did his usual shtick of, you know, hyping up the crowd and, you know, thanking everyone for being there. And he did not come out after. The previous experience, he came out with Wardlow in January and kind of hyped him up and really put him over. And Tony did not come out tonight after the show. So for what that's worth.
Well, maybe Tony was disappointed in you guys. You know, it's like the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Stand-up comedians would go, they do their thing. And if Johnny welcomed him to the couch, it meant he really liked them. And if he didn't, it meant, oh, you're fine. Well, you know, we'll probably have you back. But we don't need more of you tonight. Maybe Tony's, you know, that's kind of his way of endorsing a crowd or not endorsing a crowd is coming out afterwards.
Yeah, maybe. It'll be like right. Gary Shandling. It'll take me seven times to take the town seven times to get Tony to come out. So,
I like your trivia knowledge. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time I mentioned Ed McMahon, Todd Martin is like, wait, do you think that's getting a little dated? I was like, ah, come on, he's timeless. And then here you are, Tyler, yeah, saying that except Gary Shandling had to go before he got called over. okay, so the show opened with Orange Cassidy and Jay Lethal. Talk about the reaction to Orange Cassidy, and what do you think of the new entrance theme for him compared to the prior one in terms of getting the crowd going for his match, if there was anything to gather from that?
Yeah, I mean, he was you know, one of the more over acts from his entrance on the night. You know, I don't know if he's top three, probably top five, person coming out. And, you know, I think I like his new entrance. I also like his old entrance, but it does not really curtail well for a live audience. And if people didn't know the Pixie song, I really doubt they know the Jefferson Starship song very well. So I think it's probably neutral from his last song. But, you know, there's a lot of – when you're there, there's the song hits, and then there's kind of that initial burst of cheers, and then his name pops on the screen, and then you get the, you know, the other 70% of the cheers. So that kind of tells you, you know, it's definitely more of a visual aid for most people than the song itself. So it's a newer song. I'd be curious in 6 months if that's the same reaction, that people need to see his name on the screen to know it's him. But yeah, I think had a good reaction coming out, and his match is a typical Orange Cassidy match with a pretty good lull in the middle, and then the crowd is pretty much behind him coming back. So, you know, first 2 minutes, last 2 minutes, people get really behind an Orange Cassidy match, and I think that was pretty on display here.
Did Lethal seem like he was over? And then talk about the post-match angle and how that played out with the crowd, you know, just with, you know, did Sanjay Dutt have heel heat, or were people like, who's this guy, who's this goof? And then where was Wardlow's pop relative to other top baby faces on the show?
Yeah, so I think the only real reaction Lethal got was doing the figure four and people go woo. People in the crowd are even talking about, you know, Ric Flair's last match, et cetera. So that's a very, you know, anecdotal evidence there. But I think that association is mainly what he got. You know, one of the bigger pops was the, you know, the two kids in a trench coat spot. So I'm sure, I know you love that, Wade. I can just assume that. But that was, you know.
Tyler, you did not have the pleasure of hearing Taz point out that Chuck Taylor's face is where Trent Beretta's crotch would be. And he said that's a very interesting crotch area. So anyway, that was one of the highlights of Taz.
Yeah, the intepid Taz commentary there. But yeah, and then at post angle, I mean, I think Sanjay and Satnam, pretty generic heel heat, I would say. And then Wardlow had a good reaction. I definitely think Hangman's reaction was better in that kind of saving role. Obviously a bigger angle, so that's got to be taken into account. But I would say satisfactory, if I'm Tony Khan, of a reaction for Wardlow. But that was just where I was saying, you know, so when you're there in a live crowd, it's hard to hear, like, your section's off beat with another section doing a Wardlow chant, so it's kind of hard to hear how loud it is from where you're sitting. So, you know, I'd like to watch the feed and kind of see how that was. But it was okay.
On a broader topic, next they went to a video package on Hook beating Ricky Starks. And I'm curious it felt like more than usual in terms of video recaps and things that you would be looking at on a screen. Did it seem that way to you, and did it interrupt the flow, or because of the additional screens in the arena, it just worked out fine and it still felt like the vast majority of what happened in the ring in front of you?
Yeah, so we did see some, like we saw the Jungle Boy Christian angle with the car, but unless I was going to the bathroom, that was what you're stating was not in the arena. So it didn't feel like there was a ton of videos. So I'm going to assume that there's usually a disconnect on those videos that they show to kind of set up Rampage in events in the future. So give me a couple more, but I don't think that was in the live audience purview.
Yeah, there was Miro, there was Darby,
that Pac recap.
Oh yeah, Pac with the Kip Sabian tease. The interview with Danny Garcia backstage, and I think there was one other one. So, yeah.
So it's all the Darby one, but that's it. I didn't see any of the other ones you're talking about.
Interesting. Okay.
Huh.
Mm.
Yep. I don't get why they don't air them in the building, but whatever. You know, it's not, not that big.
Yeah.
None of them were real long. It's not like, you know, people are sitting around going, what's happening? You know?
Yeah, it didn't, for what it's worth, it didn't feel like we were missing anything. So, you know, there's always, like, people going back and getting reactions, walking to the back. Yeah, especially, I'm sure there was a couple after the Adam Cole and Young Bucks segment, and that was kind of more to see where the Young Bucks walked, which exit ramp they walked out of. But you know, so I think all those they walked off stage. They didn't walk through either tunnel, for what it's worth.
I'm not a fan of the heel and face tunnel.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of why I brought it up too. I'm with you. It's very dumb.
Yeah,
that's just me.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, you should show who you are through how you act, and people should know that, but it just feels like something some Hollywood, you know, writer came up with when doing a pro wrestling creating a pro wrestling movie. Oh, the bad guys come out this side. And I think Impact, wasn't Impact Wrestling the first to do that with, like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, where they had, like, the two tunnels? I remember they were proud of that.
I
cannot remember
sure.
that far back anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bruce, I'm going to throw to you to give your thoughts on the briefly aforementioned angle with Undisputed Elite and the angle of Cole, O'Reilly, and Fish turning on the Young Bucks and Hangman Page coming out for the save, and a seemingly a reuniting or a truce or something going on with a handshake between Matt and Hangman before Hangman rolled out of the ring and left. Did you like the angle? And then you can kind of talk about that and then throw to Tyler for his thoughts in the building on how that played out.
Sure. So earlier we said it's, you know, a paint-by-numbers show. I think this was a very A to B segment, and it was what it needed to be. I don't think there was anything that was, unless you're being nitpicky, you can point out as being overly negative, or anything that was really overly positive. Adam Cole is still good on the mic. It was smart to only have him be the one to talk and not have the other four talk in the situation. I do think Brandon Cutler is just a real dumbass, because why would you go in there not to do anything when you know you're going to get your, you know, beat? But that's his character. I think, you said in your report it was telegraphed last week. It also makes sense that this is the grouping that it became, because Adam Cole basically is the one who brought Fish and O'Reilly to AEW with him. You know, if you want to go along kind of kayfabe route. But they came after Adam Cole. And so the Young Bucks have more of a connection in AEW to the Elite, minus Cody Rhodes not being there anymore, than Adam Cole. So it all makes sense. It's A to B again. Sometimes you just need to have these segments that don't do anything spectacular, but don't do anything wrong, and they're just there to advance the story. And I think that's what they did here. It also placed a bit of importance on another forthcoming championship, which I think they failed to do a little bit with the Mid-Atlantic Championship, not just on the name and who was involved, but it was just kind of a tournament thrown together without any fanfare and hoopla. And we get the announcement of the Trios Championships, I believe it was last week. And now you're having more people drop it in promos, bring it up, literally physically stake their claim to their teams and trying to hurt others for being in that competition so they can win. So I think overall, this was what it needed to be. And in that sense, it helped put more importance on the Trios Championships.
If you're going to introduce new titles or a new title, I think you want to keep momentum going by talking more about it as soon as the announcement is made. And I'm sure we'll get there, but I would like to see more wrestlers just inserting into commentary, we're going after those six-man titles. It wouldn't be smart for Matt and Angelo to say that about Jericho right now. I suspect maybe next week, Jericho comes in short, they'll do it. But, you know, find two or three or four other teams, even if they don't seem likely to win, of people throwing their hat into the mix. You could have had Best Friends and Orange Cassidy, cut a little promo saying, you know, hey, we're officially entered in that. So maybe there's a good reason why the teams that are going to be in it, they haven't even formed yet. Who knows if Ethan Page ends up in it and who he's with, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe they'll get there. But if no one is talking about it for a couple of weeks, other than like the one or two teams that just seem like they're going to be in the finals or feuding over it once the tournament's over, you're not creating a lot of suspense. And it almost feels, to me, it feels like at the moment the belts are being created for Cole O'Reilly and Fish to feud with Hangman and Box 4.
I understand that. Depending on who was involved, I think at least this is a good step in the right direction, because you're having probably the most high-profile trios team right now, and their leader dropped that they want those titles. Not to mention the Bucks also being there, thought of as, you know, one of the top two or three tag teams in the promotion, also making their claim to want to be a trios champion. So I think at least they're in the right direction. But I also agree with you that they need to do more work in terms of you need to build out that tournament. You need to build out the depth of the division if you're going to have the titles there.
Yeah, I wouldn't take anything away from what they've done. I would just add more to it to just make it feel like that's the buzz is being – it's a buzz-generating announcement, and people are excited about this. And you know, and again, there's time for it, but it feels a little like an opportunity's passed a little bit, and they have to kind of regenerate – I won't say regenerate excitement, because I would assume there's excitement to begin with, but, you know, whatever, however you phrase that. So, Tyler, talk about how that played in the building.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how it looked on TV, but at least in person, and you know, like you said, Wade, last week, it was pretty much telegraphed. This was the occurrence with them talking with Hangman, et cetera. But it was very obvious from the framing of them in the ring. I was like, oh, they're going to turn on him. And I'm not sure if that visually was as registered as well watching the TV.
Because the teams didn't stand next to each other on either side of Cole.
Yeah.
They stood split up. So you had one Buck and one Red Dragon on one side, and then same on the other, so they could, you know, attack each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This, you know, it's hard to tell what camera tricks are done and what aren't when you're looking in the ring. But I was like, oh, wow, this is very obvious. You know, I think you guys covered it well. I think the only other positive note I have here, besides the segment working, Hangman getting a good pop and being the figure point of it, which I think is positive for him. And it just eliminates any sort of, like, is Kenny coming back before All Out? I think that's negated here, because that was the only other option with a segment like this, was Kenny coming back. So we can now focus on this from that segment of AEW. And, you know, maybe if he's going to come back, it's after this. So I think that's positive. We can focus on these guys in this story and, you know, hopefully be a good final between the two teams.
From there, we had the women's tag match earlier and longer than we usually get women's segments on Dynamite. I wouldn't say it's the only time women have been featured in a long match in the first hour, but it seems like more often if that happens, you know, I was checking my watch going, are we already 20 minutes into the second hour? They're going to this. But we had Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Definitely stars, you know, big stars, not Jade Cargill, but most of the other big stars in this division were in this match. Tyler, how did they hold the audience's attention? How did the crowd react to Storm and Rosa? Does it seem like they're over? And did Britt Baker get more cheers than boos? Take it over. Take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is like most cities, but I felt like, you know, essentially, everyone except for Christian Cage on tonight's show, even Jericho for major portions, it was basically everyone cheering for everybody. Because, like, you know, it's the first time in a town, too. So it's probably a lot of time that a lot of the audience has seen any of this talent live within AEW. So I think that has to be accounted for. But, yeah, I mean, I think the DMD Thunder Rosa chants were pretty much 50-50 the entire match. You know, they felt somewhat even as stars. I think Hayter and Toni Storm definitely felt lesser. You know, even the hierarchy is what you would think it would be, Baker and Rosa, then another tier of Storm, and then the tier below that is Jamie, which is what everyone would expect. But yeah, I think Britt is 50-50, kind of like the reverse John Cena, I guess, situation, where there's, you know, the kind of internet guys are cheering for her, and then the more casual people are doing her like they should. So that's kind of the vibe I get. But again, that's most people on the show. Adam Cole, obviously the entrance where everyone goes crazy and then he turns and does the most evil thing he can do. Jericho, you know, the big entrance, all that stuff. So I think that's more of a systemic issue within AEW and kind of leaning into that and not making that a little bit more of a walled garden. But I guess that's a whole another topic we don't need to get into, but pretty standard.
Well, let's take a brief sidebar because David Bryant, who does AW Dark Elevation reports, emailed and said, and I want to get Bruce's thoughts first and then Tyler's. In your opinion, do you think they're wasting Toni Storm? On a recent episode of Dark Elevation, they had a six-woman cluster match, and out of the six women, she got the biggest pop by far. She was also featured on the cover of Fitness Girls magazine this week, and she has a striking look. Yet despite all this, they keep booking her to lose on the main shows. Yes, they came up with excuses for why she lost, and yes, they continue to feature her prominently, but if you lose every big one, it will eventually catch up to you. Am I overthinking this? Do you guys think Toni Storm has as much potential as I do, and how would you book her differently so that she doesn't end up squandered like Ruby Soho? Bruce, you first.
Ooh, well, Tyler knows my thoughts on Toni Storm because we've discussed her a lot on the Rampage post show. And I'm, again, this might be one of those where I'm the wrong person to ask because Stardom Toni Storm, that's a separate category. Ever since she's come to WWE and now AEW, I just have not seen anything to me that sticks out as she can be the women's champion that drives your company. There's something there about her that I just, it just doesn't click with me. Part of it is I always think she has that look on her face, like she's smelling something weird. I think that needs to go away, but she just doesn't excite me as a performer, as an in-ring worker, as a promo. There's just nothing there for me. So I don't think the potential is there that so many people see in here. And that might be me being harsh, but you know, going back to the UK tournament, to crown the first UK women's champion, I thought Rhea Ripley was a surefire person to win that one because I just saw so much more in her than Toni Storm, but they went with Toni Storm. And I think my thoughts on that situation have pretty much borne out that, in at least that instance, I was correct because there's just so much more there with Rhea Ripley than there is with Toni Storm. And I just have never really seen it with Toni Storm since she came over from Stardom. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion.
All right. I find myself somewhere in the middle. I get what you're saying. And I know there's people who are very excited about her in WWE. I didn't think she brought her best. I thought she was, a step slow, and seemed frustrated or I don't know. I don't know which, it wasn't a great showing. And I think she has seemed more inspired in AEW, and she has, as David put it, a striking look. Tyler, where are you on Toni Storm's potential and how AEW is handling her, including, you know, any takeaways from seeing her in person tonight?
Yeah, I think I'm more with you, Wade, where I think there's potential, but I think she's being booked pretty properly, especially with the story being told. I think, you know, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker are your closest thing to legacy stars. Probably Sheeta would be the third person there. In the women's division. So I think just in the hierarchy of AEW, I think that has to be noted. But yeah, I mean, like I said, with the reactions, I think she was the third most over person in this match. She's kind of already gotten into her moveset, especially the running hip was a big portion here. I think she's a more elevated Ruby Soho, but I think she's in that zone of, you know, I think both of them could be champions one day when you need to, but more likely they are stepping stones or people that can have personal feuds that you can main event, you know, have be the second or third story, kind of like a Serena Deeb, that sort of situation, which is what you need. But I think there's potential there. I haven't seen it either, but there's a lot of people that are into her, and I think that can't be discounted either. So just because something's not for me, if there's some things that click, I'm willing to change my mind on that.
I should also say real quick that, you know, those are my opinions, but Todd Martin is very high on Toni Storm, much higher than I am. So there's just a dichotomy of opinions, I think. She's very polarizing, in my opinion, in terms of the potential that people see in her.
And I think sometimes it has to do with the body of work that people have seen and how much weight they put on that versus what she's doing now and the context that you first saw her. And it's just different people have different samples because she's showing up in different places. And people who only saw her most recent WWE work might think, what's the big deal? People who saw her prior have a lot of good moments to choose from where it just felt like she's the next big star. And in AEW, it just feels in between. And I think Tony Khan, historically, is he around long enough to say Tony Khan historically? doesn't always just pick someone and go with them. Like, sometimes a promoter's job is to promote. Like if a political party has a primary and somebody wins and they're running, a lot of the people in the political party might not like actually love that person and think they're the best person for the job. But once it's been decided, like they go all out and, you know, they don't sit here and hem and haw. They're like, this person for mayor, this person for governor. And sometimes I want Tony Khan, I look at wrestlers come into Tony Khan's hands and it's like, Tony, over push them. Like, who has he ever over pushed in a way that a promoter touts and features and a star wrestler or a potential megastar wrestler? I wanted to see Kenny Omega pushed more when he was world champion. Like, just pick people and over push them. And even if you have some reservations about whether it's going to work out, if it doesn't work out in 2 weeks or 2 months or 6 months, you can dial it back or change course. But I feel like we never really find out how big of a star someone can be in AEW because of Tony Khan choosing, making it clear he's choosing them and getting behind them in the way that WWE gets behind their top stars and other companies historically have. He kind of puts them out there and if the crowd responds, boom, hey, they're over. If he puts them out there and the crowd doesn't respond, he's like, huh, nothing I can do about it. And it's like, no, you're the promoter. You can kind of sway people. And bring out the best in people. So Tony Storm to me is a good example of someone who's like, just go all in. You know, when it's time, make the show as much about her as anybody else for 10 weeks and see what happens. You know, if she's not the one, be sure you're doing it to others then in the women's division instead of her. You know, it doesn't have to be her, but I think she'd be a good one to go with in that way. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, to your point, they blew that chance when Thunder Rosa went over in the championship match, was it 2 months ago? That should have been the time that Toni Storm went over, and you make her the fourth, you know, regardless of my opinions about her. I think, Tyler, we discussed that. If you're going to go with Toni Storm, that's the moment to do it. And if you don't, then she's just treading water for the rest of her AEW career. And I don't think anything since then has indicated that, you know, she might do anything more, at least this year. It's just, yeah. And to another point, this might be a flawed comparison, but yes, she didn't have the best stuff to work with in WWE, but that hasn't stopped other wrestlers, you know, like Kevin Owens or Jon Moxley from putting their effort and all into it. And like you said, Wade, she didn't just seem slow. She seemed like she wasn't focused. And it seemed like one of those things where if she didn't agree with it, kind of the criticisms you were reporting on with Keith Lee in WWE, if it wasn't something that she liked, it seemed like she would show that in her work. And I don't think that's left, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe that wasn't the time for her to have the title shot, going back to your original point, Bruce, there. Maybe it was too soon. So don't have that match then. But instead,
right,
build her up for a match at All Out. Tell her story. Let us learn who she is. Have some ups and some downs and some obstacles that she overcomes and bring the fans along with her on that ride so that at All Out you feel compelled as a booker to go, this is her night. And I don't care if Thunder Rosa is doing well and the crowds respond to her or whoever, you know, she's facing for the title. We need to go with Toni Storm right now because we've told a good story with her for 4 months and now is the time. I thought they could have had her go over. I probably would have voted for that, but I have some reservations because it felt kind of soon to do it. To end the title reign. But I think either way it was going to do some damage to someone because of the timing of the match, and I think it came too soon. So you almost want to back up another step and say, yeah, she should go over when she gets the title shot, but she should get pushed for months and build that anticipation beforehand. By the way, Tyler, I'm sorry, did you say you got to see the Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti video of them on their European wedding getaway?
Yes, I did see that one.
Okay. Did the crowd respond at all? Yes. At this point, I got to say this. At this point, I'm okay with Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti mashing on TV because it might work to eliminate Kid Cash and that woman, make tongue kiss, you know, tongue wrestling.
Kid Rock.
I'm sorry. Yes, I said it again.
I was like, Kid Cash.
I'm so sorry. Kid Rock and his date or whoever that was. I don't know. I don't know about him. I don't need to know. But I need that memory wiped. And that SummerSlam. Oh my God, that was so. Yeah. Anyway, the Sammy and Ty are no longer wrestling's most obnoxious new couple. I'll put it that way. So how did the crowd respond in the building for that time?
Yeah, I would say minimal, pretty not. I mean, apathy it seems like a strong word, but it was definitely, you know, it was kind of a dead period in the show anyway. It felt, you know, like a good time for people to get up and get a drink or, you know, go to the bathroom or whatever. You know, like the Darby one, which was shown, talking about Bertie King, that got a, you know, a cheer for Darby on the screen. But, you know, not a boo for Sammy and Ty, but, you know, not much of a reaction. But I don't think a video really lent itself to be that anyway. But, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Yep. All right. By the way, Taz announced Team Taz is no more. He just lost control. No one was telling me anything, so Team Taz is done. But I wish him all luck. So RIP Team Taz. Mm. And then that was followed with Powerhouse Hobbs getting a squash win over Ren Jones. What do you think of the presence of Powerhouse Hobbs as a heel? He had, I thought, more menace when he came to the ring. He didn't do the half upper lip snarl that he leaned into, I thought, too hard. I was actually happy to see him expand his, you know, facial expressions or eliminate that and go with something that felt actually more sinister and less kind of cartoonish. And I thought it was a good showing for him as a singles heel, as short as it was. How did it come across in the building, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, the entrance itself was, I thought, really powerful live. I'm not sure. It looked like there was a lot of tight shots on him walking to the ring, but obviously the wide shot of him kind of lifting the chandelier-like object up and emerging was pretty powerful and cool. And, you know, obviously that's a good sign when you get a very unique entrance. Him walking to the ring. I didn't get as many facial cues being in the building, but yeah, it felt good. I mean, he's always had great entrance music, and it's always kind of been cut off with him in a group. So I think that tied with his presence worked well. And then, yeah, getting the squash is good. Very surprised. I'm not sure if there's like better explanation on commentary, but him just kind of swatting Ricky Starks away, I thought was interesting. Not bad. I mean, I like Ricky Starks a lot, but an interesting call here to see who kind of comes out better. And I did not foresee that, but I don't know if commentary made a big deal about that or not, or if they haven't, you know, announced the match. I, you know, obviously missed all that, but yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So Starks shoved the ref when the ref tried to separate them. So Starks runs out, goes after Hobbs, ref gets between them. Starks in his temper just turns and shoves the ref down. And that was the opening for Hobbs to give him a quick spine buster. The announcers, I think, made a comment, Bruce, about, you know, Starks has to watch his temper and stay focused on, you know, who his real enemy is or something like that. It didn't seem like a burial of Starks as much as, oh, he just couldn't wait to get his hands on Hobbs and he let his temper get the better of him. What was the pop for Starks, by the way, in the building, Tyler?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I would say it was, I was trying to think, since you asked me about Wardlow, I think obviously Moxley, Hangman, The Acclaimed, Cassidy, Wardlow, and then probably Starks here is probably my hierarchy of babyface run-in reactions. So if that makes sense. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
And I think people were pointed, but it was definitely like the air came out of the room a little bit when he kind of got thrown to the side. You thought you'd get like, you know, the typical him getting the heel out of the ring and then demanding a match and him saying, I'll give it to you next week and get the boo and all that stuff. So I was surprised that didn't happen. But yeah, I think it was positive for Starks. Anyway, I was wondering how it was portrayed on TV because I could see if there was enough there to tell a good story of him overcoming the odds as a babyface, but, you know, just didn't get any of that.
Now, you talked about some of the biggest crowd reactions of the night. What about Jim Ross? You left him off. Is he top two, top three? How'd that go, Tyler?
Yeah, it was totally fine. Now, you know, it was, I'm sure, how many times did it say The Ohio State University on the broadcast? Probably way too many. Probably an obnoxious amount, but that's where the, you know, Ohio State basketball team plays. So the Oklahoma theme song is not the greatest inducer of a cheer. I'll let that be known. So.
Absolutely. So then Christian Cage took on Matt Hardy. I'm not kidding for people who have been away for 12 years and can't believe you know, that actually is still happening on national television.
Or 20.
I know. I mean, 12 years ago, people were, you know, like, it had been going on a long time. Actually, yeah, 20 years ago, it hadn't been going on a long time. But still, if you told someone 20 years ago, yeah, they're going to be having a singles match, they'd be like, really? Huh. All right. Okay. So I thought it was a decent match. You know, they worked hard. And then the angle afterwards leading to Jungle Boy running out. How did how did the did they hold the interest of the crowd for the match itself? What kind of heel heat did Christian have? And then just the Jungle Boy run in. How did that compare to Ricky Starks, if it stood out to you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I didn't put him in my hierarchy, so you can take that for what it's worth on Jungle Boy. A different scenario, obviously, with Luchasaurus coming out and then it kind of being a sneak attack by Jungle Boy. So that's not going to entail you as much of a pop. But, you know, the reaction afterwards, everyone loves to sing the song, so that's kind of grading on a curve because obviously everyone wanted to do that. But so I would say it was okay, just it was not really the spot for him to get a huge pop. In that matter, because at least they're live. The question I have as a viewer, and I think most other people that watch regularly that were there, is, you know, is Luchasaurus, you know, what are his true intentions here? Because he's been pretty opaque. So that was more, I think, what people were locked on than Jungle Boy coming out. But, yeah, then the match itself, I just think, at least for an AEW audience, I think that's a hard match to be as long as it was. I don't know if you have the time. Wait or around about time, but it felt like it was like 15 to 18 minutes, and it's probably more like 12. That's usually never a good time, but 11, yeah. So, I mean, it felt, I would have bet it was 15 if you asked me. So take that there. But it just, you know, it's probably a better match on TV than live, just a lot of, you know, chopping and, you know, just normal stuff. But, and, you know, they're, you know how old these guys are, and, you know, taking that table spot, there's a couple spots that look pretty rough. And so, yeah, it was okay, but it's just a lot of the same in a match like that as opposed to what the audience saw in the beginning with Orange Cassidy, where you have, you know, his style that is very much established, but at least you get that lull in the middle, but excitement at the end, and minus the table spot that was pedestrian for those two guys, I would say, in their long history, not as 50-year-olds, but, you know, was not enough to bring it home to the live audience.
Very good. So then Ethan Page came out. So did Ethan Page get heel heat, or were fans like, you know, shut up and let's get on with the show?
Well, yeah, I mean, you heard him. I mean, when he came out during the commercial break, because I assume the it started back up with his face in the camera. At least that's the way I kind of read the formatting of the segment. But, you know, he got those cheers when he was, like, you know, doing the Ricky Starks bit from last week. And then he had to, you know, be, you know, he's great on the mic, and he had to turn it against them and get the crowd to boo him again. But yeah, I mean, him coming out, I would say, was tepid. I think people, you know, it's good to have him without Dan Lambert for weeks on end to kind of establish his own heel persona. But I think a majority of the people, if I had to psychoanalyze, were expecting Dan Lambert to come out and so they could boo him instead of Ethan Page. So that's how it was. But, you know, he got a reaction both ways, and he got the cheers and then flipped it over to boo. So I thought that was pretty powerful for him on the mic.
What do you think of Ethan Page, both of you? Because he's been with Lambert, he's been with Sky. Bruce, what are your thoughts on him? You know, because I kind of think, like, with MJF out of the picture, that you know, heel who's just yelling at the fans and cutting, you know, caustic heel promos, it's like everybody has their own brand. It seems like Christian has kind of taken over that. But you also have Ethan as, I think, a really good talker. But I wouldn't put him in the realm of MJF. I don't think when he says, I want to be on TV every week and it'll change the ratings, I don't think it's meant to actually be taken seriously. He's not going to be at the level MJF was. But how useful is he, and do you think they're utilizing him well? Bruce, you first.
I think Ethan Page is a microcosm of a lot of talent in AEW, in that they are more talented than they are being booked as. And that comes with Tony Khan signing every other wrestler he can sign to a contract. When that happens, you're not going to have as much room for people to be on your two main hours of television. I did note that to myself. Ethan Page dropping the word nitwit made him the MVP of tonight's show. Just throwing that out there. I do. So in Impact, he was kind of a polarizing again, because some of his characters in Impact were a bit hit or miss. But I think what he's been in AEW is probably more of what he should be. And with that, I think he could be a little higher on the card, you know, challenge for a TNT title. I do think that he could be someone along the lines of like a Tony Nese, who they seem to throw out there for every sort of enhancement match or to job to the better, to the higher tier wrestlers. I think he's a better person to put in that position, and also more legitimate of a person that when they do sometimes get a shot of some sort, whether it's a number one contenders match or whatnot, that there's more legitimacy to him than a Tony Nese, or I'm just bringing up Tony Nese because he's the first person I came to mind. But some of the wrestlers like that in AEW. I'm intrigued because Stokely is – I love Stokely. He's, as Malcolm Bivens in NXT, he was amazing. He was really the one that held Diamond Mine together. I was worried about them once he left, but Julius Creed has actually been the one to hold the whole group together, so kudos to him. I think this could be a fruitful maybe a little mini push for Ethan Page. Not to, a championship level, but maybe he becomes chosen to be in some sort of tournament or a number one contenders match after winning, 2 months or so on Dark and on Dynamite.
Tyler, your thoughts on Ethan?
Yeah. And I think on your MJF point, I think what AEW is going to have to do is have kind of an MJF by committee sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. So it's a rotating cast of, if it's Cage now, then I think Page could fill that role for, in between pay-per-views, and you have a rotating four or five guys that can do it, and I think that works well to scratch that itch. But yeah, I like Page a lot. I long-term, I don't see him, at a championship level as a singles guy, but with trios belts, with the tag belt, I think that's certainly an option. But I think if I were booking him, I would not put him with a manager. I would have him be, a 60-40 manager wrestler who does a lot of talking and, he can work in the ring, but he is he's a good wrestler and a great talker. So I would just utilize what he's better at more often than what he is good at. So it's not really a great option there, but, he could do what he did tonight and build individual programs and build himself up to a level against the babyface and have the babyface go over on him. Someone like, I know him and Darby have had a feud. I mean, it feels like a while ago, but anyone like that you kind of need to reheat, that's a babyface. I think he would be a great contender to do that. And I don't think he loses much as a heel and losing more often than not to that babyface who needs a lift.
Go ahead, Bruce. Yeah.
Would a good comparison then for Ethan Page be Eli Drake?
Pretty good. Ethan's I think in terms of their ceiling, probably Eli feels a little more Miz, and Ethan feels a little more, who's a WWE comparison? I feel like there's, he's not Sami Zayn in terms of personality, but in terms of like, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he finds his kind of voice and character.
Yeah. I would say like the worst version of Kevin Owens. I mean, that's not really a critique on either guy, but like the worst booking of Kevin Owens, I should say. Because he's a good worker, but he's a great character.
I think it was Jason Paul on Twitter who said, why is Ethan Page with a manager when he's one of their better talkers? How about Ethan being more like Kevin Owens, more like Sami Zayn, more like MJF, just a standalone heel instead of having to, give a rub to or get a rub from a manager? I think he can carry that. I kind of agree with that. Okay, well, let's move to the dumpster match. Tyler, talk about the reaction to the both teams, really, because I'm kind of curious if they got treated as, oh, yeah, we're looking forward to this, or why is this like the semifinal on Dynamite, and why are they feuding? And then also just how the Vince McMahon comment, for those who didn't see the show, Max Caster said, we'll make the Trash Boys retire like Vince McMahon. And then he also said, I'm more positive than Joe Biden's COVID test. So those are the two standout lines I thought most memorable from Max. So, yeah, hit those points, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a crowd-pleasing match anywhere, and I think that was reflected. But, I mean, I put the Acclaim pretty high. I think I put them at 3 in my babyface overall crowd reactions. Now, there's a big sustained reaction. They get the rap is a good point to get cheered, also winning a match like that. And, playing it up to the crowd, getting that moment as a newly turned tag team and getting that moment. So there's a lot going in their favor to get a good reaction tonight that the promotion did to do that. But, yeah, I think obviously everyone loves saying ass boys in a live crowd. So that's gonna last the Gun Club for a long time. So they've worked themselves into a good niche. But the match itself I thought was good. As soon as you could see the styrofoam on Bowen the second time you went in there, there was definitely a letdown in the crowd of like, you know, you want them to be safe, but it's like, oh, yeah, that thing is just full of styrofoam to protect it. So I didn't think that helped. But, yeah, I think overall the match was well-received live, and the Acclaimed are, I don't know, if you were told me they were going to turn 3 months ago, I would not think it was going to be this good. Not to say that they're, you know, a number one tag team right now, but I think their face turn's been good, and it feels like a good spot for them. So I think this was a good way to get them in that spot. But, yeah, match itself was gimmicky. And I can see a lot of people not liking it for that reason, but that's kind of, you know, it's kind of what their niche is right now on the show. I think you kind of need that, and they're a step above a Danhausen. So I think they fit a good niche in the show.
Two of the better announcer moments on the show. One was when Matt Menard asked Tony Schiavone if he wants to know what makes his nipples hard. And Schiavone said no, like just no, emphatically. Let's move on. Are you kidding me? No. So that was a fun little exchange. But also in the dumpster match at the end, Taz said, "Oh, you can hear this. You can smell the stench from here." And what's
that's just the ass.
And then Excalibur said, "Yeah, that's actually just the everyday smell of the guns. That's the guns on any day." So it was better delivered. Excalibur showing some wit. But I always enjoy, you know, when announcers put over the smell of something, you know, like, I mean, I usually don't like the segments that involve it because, like, oh, you can smell the puke from here, or, you know, whatever. But, and I'll still put that stuff over. Okay, so then we're to the main event. Chris Jericho, Wheeler Yuta. Tyler, talk about if Wheeler Yuta seemed like he was a babyface who fans embraced in the main event spot against someone of Jericho's caliber with the stakes as high as this match.
Yeah, I think so. I think that definitely is buoyed by his, you know, Blackpool Combat Club affiliation. I think without that, he might be a little bit more on the Ethan Page island of not really sure how to register his character. But that certainly helps. And, you know, I don't know if it came across, but, you know, some good Wheeler chants as the match opens. And, you know, not really any sort of dueling chants between he and Jericho during the match. And, you know, he had a couple near falls with, you know, 7 or so minutes left that the crowd, I think, believed were possible wins. So, yeah, I think he's on a good trajectory. And this is, you know, if I were him and if I was Tony Khan, I'd be happy with the reaction he got tonight in a super obvious loss to Chris Jericho, which is totally fine for the way the story's being conceived. But, you know, when Claudio and Moxley both come out, they both got bigger pops than he did, certainly.
Bruce, is there anything you want to bring up for Tyler before we let him go? We've kept him a long time here, but it's been a good conversation, I think.
So a couple of things that I want to touch on that I wasn't able to comment on real quick. The opening match, I want to ask Tyler a question, and then I want to bring something up that I promise I'll relate back to the match. If you were to look at how the card was laid out, is this the match you would have opened the show with?
I think so. It's kind of the most not straightforward match, but it was entertaining, and a Cassie match kind of has a draw. I just don't know what you'd put there. I would not put the dumpster match. I would not put Hardy and Cage. The only other match I would put in that spot, if I was switching around, would be the women's tag match. So I think that would be an okay transition. But, no, I think it was okay. I wouldn't switch it in hindsight.
Okay. I guess I have a follow-up. How did fans – I'm not sure – I can't remember if you discussed this, but how was the ending to the match taken by the fans, and how did they receive – and you said they didn't really react to Jay Lethal too much, but
yeah.
Were they really let down after Orange Cassidy lost? Were they booing Jay Lethal for heel heat, or more so because they were upset that OC didn't get the win?
Yeah, I would say more of an apathetic deflation of the crowd. You know, I think people still don't know Jay Lethal's moveset entirely, so I think hitting that lethal injection at the end is not – you know, not everybody, but, you know, you can tell when there's people who are really into the product around you and who they're, who isn't. And usually it's a 70-30 or so. 70 who are kind of just like there for the vibes and all that. So I think they were surprised and they thought Cassidy, you know, he just is totally framed as a guy who would win a match like that. And if there was not Jay Lethal having a title shot, I certainly would think he would go over there too. So, yeah, I would think it was it'd be a more upbeat crowd, obviously, if Cassidy had won. And, you know, there's a lot of shenanigans afterwards and setting stuff up. But, yeah, I think deflation was a good
thing there. Well, thank you. So the thing I want to bring up that I relate back to this is the local promotion here in Honolulu called Unified Championship Wrestling, or Unified Championship Entertainment Wrestling, otherwise known as Oos Wrestling. They've had two shows since they've come back from the pandemic, one in May and one actually last Thursday, which was main evented by ROH Women's Champion Mercedes Martinez against NWA wrestler Genocide. And it was for the Oos Wrestling Kaimana Women's Championship. It was a great match. Mercedes Martinez won. I was able to meet Mercedes Martinez. I was ecstatic. She's a legend. But I bring that up because at the end of the show, their next show is in October, October 27th. So for those of you who are making trips to Honolulu that time, it's actually going to be headlined by Jay Lethal. And they didn't say against who. I'm assuming against either the Oos Wrestling champion, Chris Wilde, or maybe Marcus the Centaur. But he will be here in Honolulu. So we're debating on if we want to go or not because of the allegations surrounding Jay Lethal. Do you have a sense that there was anyone in the crowd who knew about the Jay Lethal allegations, or is it just something more along the sort of more in-tune wrestling fans regarding Jay Lethal?
Yeah, I mean, definitely more the in-tune fans. One of the friends I was with is probably, you know, he's into wrestling, not as much as I am. He was kind of asking me questions about Marty Scurll versus Jay Lethal and like the reasons why one is on AEW and why the one is not. And, you know, I don't know if we need to get into the nuance of that. I think both, you can check their past and make your own assumptions on both. But yeah, I mean, I would say for people like that, but this is not to be mean to Jay, but I just don't think people know a lot about him, the general audience, or have been really given reason to like look into stuff. I think that's kind of helped him, in my opinion, on this issue that you're bringing up. But he's not more well known to the general audience. I don't know if he ever does, if that's going to become an issue. But I would say besides that, I didn't hear anyone bringing up anything like that. But that's not to say that that was not happening. But yeah, that's kind of the vibe I get, at least with the live crowd tonight. No, okay, Jay Lethal shirts.
Sorry,
I didn't see Jay Lethal shirts.
No, did you have anything else, Bruce?
Yeah. Before I asked the question, it's interesting because the people around me were cheering that I mentioned the allegations, and then they all just went, ooh, yeah, that's right. So there are people that know about it, at least in the Honolulu wrestling scene. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm glad you two had the same kind of the similar thoughts to me, that's Powerhouse Hobbs. When he made his entrance, you know, you talk about his music. My music library is just filled with a bunch of thug rap, so this music is right in line with a lot of stuff I listen to. The first thought that came to my mind when he made his entrance was, this man is money. So, that wasn't something I had thought about too much beforehand while he was with Team Taz, maybe because of the snarling, maybe because he was kind of not being able to show everything in a team, but I thought today he came off as a legitimate, someone you could push to the top tier of your men's singles division. Did that hold through the whole time, through the Ricky Stark segment? And what are your thoughts on his potential after seeing him live tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. That's kind of why I was wondering how commentary framed things, because last week watching it, I definitely assumed it would be him and Stark's in Powerhouse, and it would be Stark's getting the win and kind of going into that next echelon of stardom, and then Hobbs kind of refinding himself on the card. And I questioned that sort of booking narrative in my mind watching this tonight because of, you know, the entrance he got, the just, you know, his attitude, him in the ring there. And, you know, I think if you got to look outside the ring too, Tony Khan just essentially, in his mind, I'm going to assume, made Wardlow kind of from nothing into a big star in his mind. And I think he can use a lot of the same beats to do Hobbs. I think if I'm a promoter, if I'm Tony Khan as a promoter, I know I can do that now at this point, more so than a, you know, a Thunder Rosa or a Hangman, someone that I made champion that I'm not totally behind, as you alluded to, Wade. So, I guess your other question there is his trajectory. Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. I think where Wardlow goes, I think anything Wardlow is doing or will do, I think Hobbs could be in a similar boat. I think they're equal promos, and you know, I think I've seen Hobbs work more than I have Wardlow, so I might even take him above Wardlow just from the long term and not needing to be as protected if Wardlow doesn't. You know, I'm not saying he's not going to improve, but if he stays the same in the ring, I would have more upside on Hobbs long term.
All right, thank you.
Tyler, is there anything else want to share with us before I let you go?
I don't think so. The only thing I forgot to say, FTR came out before the show started. So Tony did his hype the crowd up, and then he introduced FTR. They said that they, you know, were not medically cleared, even though they're at the Ric Flair show. They said, you know, they were off one more week, and they were excited to wrestle next week. I don't know if they have anything booked at the show in Minneapolis next week. So just look out for that. And they were kind of the hype men for more so than Tony Khan was, which I thought was very interesting. And, you know, there's some stuff on Elevation. I think there's some Jade stuff to check out on Elevation, but really good Jade stuff on that. It's not super critical, but they kind of introduced Madison Rayne, kind of let her know her spot, and they're building to a match between those two. So another spoiler, sorry. But that was, you know, something to look for. Someone, you know, Jade hasn't really had a feud, and I think look for that to be a feud going into All Out or on a branded show of some type. So yeah, I'll save you 2 hours of Elevation.
Well, or check out David Bryan's report next week on the show. Very entertaining in his coverage. Very good. Tyler, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll hear from you Friday on the VIP side of things with your take on Rampage on the VIP Rampage Bowl show.
Very good. Thanks, guys.
Let me know if you're the host, Tyler, a co-host.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Great. All right, Tyler Sage, PW Torch contributor. All right, so if you stuck with us, you're welcome to call or email with any response. We won't go too much longer here, but our number is 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you're interested in participating in the show. We'll go to 905 next, Erico 905. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's Daryl calling from Toronto.
Oh, you said Daryl?
Yeah, from Toronto.
Yeah, hey, Daryl. Thanks for calling. Yeah, what's on your mind about that?
How are you today?
Thanks for calling. Good.
It was just an okay show.
Yeah.
Do you think with Luchasaurus, does anyone else find that his music sounds a lot like the Kane music?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Wardlow music is basically just the Goldberg music.
I don't think that's an accident. Yeah. I mean, so, I think they're going for those notes. And you know, you could say, oh, it's you know, copying, but it also sometimes the music just fits a sort of type of character. And so in a parallel universe, maybe the music for Wardlow would sort of sound like that, even if Goldberg didn't exist. Same thing for Luchasaurus. But yeah, I don't even think it's a bad thing if it's a little inspired by it. You know, I would say FTR's theme is a little more suspicious when it comes to the Midnight Express, but that's just my personal thing.
Well, I think Bruce, any, with their connection to,
I was being very dry there. Yeah, I totally agree. Bruce, any thoughts on that?
My only addition is if Luchasaurus ends up being the Kane of AEW, he's going to have a much better career than he ever would have imagined when he was in NXT.
Yeah, yeah, really. what else, Darryl?
They announced that they're coming to Toronto finally in August.
Yeah.
And I think the holdup was the COVID vaccination issue because they have to be fully vaccinated. But next week, the Quake of the Lake is in Minnesota, right? Are you going to that, Wade?
That's the plan, yep.
So many earthquakes in Minnesota.
You got to be careful with that. You got to watch that out. So you've been to a lot of shows, Wade. So I guess my question for you is, what does Wade Keller wear to a wrestling show? Are you a wrestling t-shirt wearer, or do you just like a polo?
Do you wear
or
Torch member merchandise?
I dress the same way I dressed during COVID when I didn't leave the house. It's, you know, a pair of jeans and a plain. I'm very big on plain t-shirts.
Do you remember the last time you wore a wrestling shirt? Do you remember the last time you wore a wrestling shirt to an event?
Oh, God. I don't think I have worn a wrestling shirt to an event since I started the Torch as a teenager.
Oh, really?
I mean,
the AWA days,
I don't,
you would have worn one?
Yeah, but t-shirts weren't, I go far enough back, t-shirts weren't really a big thing back then. So what I was trying to think of is when I went to, like, WWF shows, probably because they were just expensive and I was a poor kid, I didn't, like, buy a bunch of t-shirts, wrestling shirts, even, you know, off the merch stand. So my honest answer, and no one's ever asked me this outright, I don't know that I've ever worn a wrestling t-shirt to a wrestling event. Maybe sometimes when I sort of went, I went to some indie shows in my 20s with friends, and I'm not saying alcohol was involved, but I wore a Blue Panther mask and acted out a little bit. I had a little alter ego when I set the ringside camera and journalist notepad down and just had some fun with my friends. I remember the look Mick Karsh gave me when he realized it was me, you know, going bonkers for some of the matches. But honestly, it really would be sort of, I mean, not to be too stodgy about it, but it would sort of be inappropriate. And I think I'd be looked down upon if I was walking around backstage with a t-shirt of a wrestler or even a wrestling company that I'm covering. Just because I have always approached this not as a guy doing a podcast who's a fan. I mean, my roots are in journalism. I interned at a major news station. I've worked at KFN radio. I have a journalism degree. I mean, my thing is kind of approaching this in a journalistic sense. And so, you know, you don't see a lot of journalists going to basketball games wearing a t-shirt for a team that they're covering or their favorite player either.
And we call ethics. And as someone who also, I have a broadcasting degree from a top four broadcasting college in the nation. So one reason I contribute to the Torch and I enjoy the Torch so much is Wade you don't sway when it comes to ethics and morality. You stick with your journalistic ethics and integrity. And that can't be said for everyone who covers, quote unquote, professional wrestling. So
I appreciate your kind words there, Bruce. So Daryl, I mean, I know some people like, oh, you know, whatever, but I mean, it is sort of like, I think I would be self-conscious if I wore a wrestling t-shirt to an event. Cause I just often, I'm always going for work, you know, it's always a work duty. And sometimes I see wrestlers afterwards and that'd be just kind of, yeah, I think it would be kind of tacky. I mean, it's done. I'm not going to be like super judgy of other people to do it, but it just isn't for me.
I do also think it's generational because I think my generation, it's almost seen as passe if you don't go to an event wearing a shirt of the wrestling company or wrestlers there. So I do think there's some generational things in there too. And it goes back to what you were saying, Wade. These kind of t-shirts just weren't available as much when you were younger as to, you know, me growing up and especially right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Daryl, yeah. Any follow up on that or anything else?
No, I thought that'd be just a fun question to ask because there wasn't
Totally. Too
much great stuff on the show. So just something off the beaten. And when you get into your little stories, I enjoy that. And your podcast is the first one I listen to out of all the wrestling journalists, just because you give a fair take on the show every week, good or bad, whereas some people I feel like are afraid to hurt the feelings of Tony Khan. And I think sometimes he needs to be held accountable sometimes, especially on Twitter. Otherwise, really the show's good most of the time. My uncle is a diehard wrestling fan. So in Canada, we don't get Rampage. And he's 54, so he doesn't actually have a smartphone or internet. So he doesn't get the inside references, and he doesn't get the back history. And I think they do an awful job of what their storytelling sometimes, if the story takes place other than Dynamite, because that's basically three times the amount of people that watch Rampage right now. So I really wish they would do a better job with stuff like that. I just like to call and talk to you.
Cool.
you're a great listen, and I think you do an awesome job.
Daryl, thanks. You made my night. I appreciate it, and I always enjoy hearing Greg Oliver's accent on other people. I've known Greg since we were both like 18 years old, and anytime I hear someone from Toronto, I'm like, oh, he sounds like Greg Oliver. So, and I'm sure people think that about us Minnesotans, too. Someone probably says when they meet someone from Minnesota, like, you sound like Wade Keller.
You sound nothing like Jason Powell, I'll tell you that.
is he
or Kelly Wells?
I was just gonna say yeah, or Kelly Wells. That's right, yeah.
Yep, Kelly's from here. We do have our Minnesota does have kind of pockets of – there's places you go in Minnesota and Minnesotans be like, oh, my God, really? You're so stereotypical. And then other times, we just sound like the generic newsreader, without that discernible accent. But, we have our traits that people pick up on and point out and poke fun at. Like I say, the word known, I turn it into two, two syllables. Like it rhymes with Owen Hart, known. It's known to be true. So we all have our little things. Daryl, please don't be a stranger. Call again.
I will. And also, is it Timberwolves or Timberwolves? Because I'm pretty sure you call them the Timberwolves.
No, I call them Timberwolves. I mean, I don't want you to produce any tape to prove me wrong. Let's just say I'm consistent on that. I think it's Timberwolves. Yeah.
He calls them Timberwolves when they're struggling, which has been most of the past decade.
They're going to be good this year. They're going to be good.
They will be. They will be.
Yeah, like really good if everyone stays healthy. All right. Go cheer on your Raptors, Daryl. Thanks.
Blue Jays, but I will. Thank you, Wade. You have a great night.
All right, cool.
You too, Bruce.
Yeah, sure. I'm really glad you called. Hopefully you'll call again, too.
Thank you. Take care.
You bet. All right. I don't, Minnesota nice is a thing. Toronto nice is a thing too.
He might be your on-site correspondent for Rampage or for Dynamo when they go through there, huh?
Don't get me started on people from Montreal. I tell you. Anyway, save that for the fix. All right.
Kevin Owens at?
We have maybe a Skype call here, or an international number. If you heard a beep, this might be you. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. That does not sound like someone talking to us live, so they might have set the phone down next to the TV or something. We'll wrap up the show here with the caller part with Brian from Boston. Brian, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Before I get to that, that last call was kind of weird. I think somebody maybe crank called you or something.
The way we avoid crank calls is by moving on and not acknowledging them, Brian.
Sorry, my bad.
You're giving them attention. They don't.
Yeah, I do think the Timberwolves will be definitely championship contenders if they stay healthy, because I root for them as well. So.
Oh, great.
The
best regional ball.
Yeah, more or less. I thought the show was pretty good. It seemed. I don't know. It seemed less chaotic, more structured, and
yes,
yes. I'm sure you saw that. I'm sure you did. You see that report by John Alba about some of the changes to the that Khan was making, like promoting people in different positions.
That's just a press release. That's not the press release. They put that up on their website too, and. Yeah, I it's funny because I asked Tony Khan about 4 weeks ago about kind of his core group, his support team. He didn't get back to me, but then he got back to me here with like this long press release. I don't know if I inspired it or not, but I literally asked a question for which this would have been an awesome, thorough answer. And it came like 3-4 weeks later. And yeah, I mean, Sanjay Dutt's at the top, being promoted to vice president of production and creative coordination, QT Marshall. Then is promoted to vice president of show and creative coordination. Pat Buck has been promoted to vice president of talent development. Tony Schiavone has been promoted to senior producer and special advisor to talent. He'll work directly with talent as part of talent relations, which is cool. He's just really popular, nice guy. Madison Rain joins AWS coach. Christopher Daniels also is working as a manager of talent relations. So, a lot of just kind of official titles given to people who I think had less formal roles. And I'm not saying Tony's going to admit my text to him spawned this, but it feels like a little coincidental. Maybe the Triple H thing inspired him too with some reshuffling. But I think it was time, you know, it was time for the company to grow up. And I don't mean grow up like, you know, grow up in a derisive way, but it's been around a while and Tony's got familiar with the people who he trusts and he should have a core team. And he definitely respects Sanjay and QT and Pat Buck and Tony and Madison Rayne and Christopher Daniels. I think that's a good group.
I tend to think, your text notwithstanding, I do tend to think Triple H has a lot to do with this because I think Tony Khan, now that he's against a guy who's not a moron and isn't going to book WWE into oblivion, I think he's realizing now that he can't do everything by himself, and you know he has to have some more, what you might say, quality control, and you know delegate things, and that's how you're going to compete against someone like Triple H, because the haphazard approach, you know, trying to do everything by yourself, that worked against Vince McMahon, but it's not going to work against Triple H, and I think that's probably big reasons why, maybe your text too, but I did notice another thing. It does seem like he might be taking the women's wrestling more seriously, elevating Madison Rayne like that, and they did do like a trademark, I think it was yesterday or earlier today, for like all the women's wrestling or something. So it sounds to me like he's going to start taking it more seriously and maybe delegate it. So I'm just wondering if you guys think that maybe a lot of this is due to Vince McMahon now being out of the picture and Triple H being in.
I don't care what Tony tells himself or others, and I don't know what he's told himself or others as far as this goes. The changes in WWE have to affect him in some way. You know, just mentally, it's like you recalibrate. Your competition is different now. And even if he just kind of stays the course and he goes, you know, I got to see what Paul Levesque does. I feel like I'm doing what I think is right, regardless of who my competitor is. But, you know, he came out and said, hey, I've signed all my top people. People, you know, this isn't going to lead to a bunch of people defecting. I've got my top people signed. I don't think when people were speculating about people leaving, they meant the top wrestlers necessarily exclusively or even primarily. I think the thought was, Tony, look up and down your roster, because if you're under-pushing someone, they now can look over and think, well, Paul Levesque would do more with me than Tony is, and I'll end up with more money. And I think that's Tony's concern, is he can't just now sit back and think, well, you know, Vince doesn't like him, so I can take my time pushing them, or even, you know, not that he would like, oh, I'm going to underpay them, but they don't need to be a priority to put in a money position yet. And now he's kind of got to get that straightened out, you know, and I don't know if, you know, Hobbs and Starks and I don't know, you know, we can list some names of people who have benefited. So who have been moved up the card a little bit, you know, we might see more of that in the next month in response to that. But I think formalizing and perhaps organizing his support team is important. I mean, this is a big job, and he's one person. And I think on the outside looking in, there's some signs of burnout and some signs of sloppiness in a variety of areas. And the Sanjay Dutt description, and really QT Marshall too. Like QT Marshall's is he will help manage show elements, including planning programs and storylines, character development, overseeing extras, and live event logistics. Sanjay Dutt, he will coordinate communication of AW storylines between post-production and key staff to maintain content workflow, and he'll mentor new producers too. I just think there's an acknowledgement that having a few extra people involved is going to be helpful, but all these people were involved. Like, this isn't a bunch of new hires. I think it's just sort of formalizing and maybe organizing some things that are already happening, but I think it will be good for the product. And, you know, going back to the original comment, maybe this show was reflective of that. You know, maybe this show was a more sober, sober is not the good word, rational.
Balanced,
yeah. Like less frenzied. Just mm-hmm. it feels like it got went through an editor or two to just smooth out some of the frenetic, breathless aspects of it. And, you know, part of being a leader if you're Tony Khan, is understanding, I don't want to say weaknesses, but just areas that aren't of interest to you or aren't a strength of what you bring weekly to the process. And after 3 years, you should have a pretty good handle on that. Or if people around you who you ask, well, what can I do better? And who do you think can help me? And are you one of those people? And this press release feels like that's one of them, or that this is a product of that. Bruce, your thoughts.
All I really have to add to that is going back to the formation of AEW and the beginning of Dynamite, your one overarching consistent critique is that they need to have quality control. You've been saying that over and over again since as long as AEW has been around, that there's a lack of structure. And I think, like you said, it was reflected tonight that it felt like there was more structure. It felt like it wasn't frenzied. It felt more fluid. And you also said it had the feeling of a pre-tape show, which,
yeah,
again, that's probably from that quality control. So it sounds like after 2.5 years, they're finally Tony Khan's finally understanding that, especially when you also bought ROH and you're booking that, and then you help with the Jaguars, and then you run Fulham. Like,
yeah,
you can't have all that energy to actually book and promote a wrestling promotion by yourself. So a step in the right direction for them. I hope it maintains, because if this was a show every Tuesday, I'd be more apt to watch every week. It just gets so the thing with AEW, the thing with NXT, with Triple H at the end when they were competing, is everything was so fast fire. There was no breathing space, no time to take in the segment. Today you were able to get that, and I hope that continues because it does wonders for the fans. I think you talk about the next million. We know there's a next million because SmackDown has that next million that are watching pro wrestling. Little things like this, where you make the show feel more balanced and fluid and less frenzied and chaotic, will do more than I think they realize in terms of bringing people back who left and adding more viewers who haven't tried AEW in the long term.
Good comments. Bryant, back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah, I tend to agree with all that. I mean, the best friends, I really didn't want to see them on my television again, but, you know, their segments were less, shall we say, nauseating this time around. So, like you said, Bruce, probably some quality control in there.
Wade's words, not mine. That's all credit to Wade.
Well, credit to both of you. But I think if they're not planning on selling WWE, or if they do plan on selling it and just continuing it the way it is now with Triple H, I tend to think the like a good version of like the Monday Night Wars, where, you know, you have a relatively good period where, you know, healthy competition brings out the best, good storylines and stuff like that. And, you know, WCW was a mess near the end of its storyline. I mean, they literally, like, every match was riddled with interference. AEW doesn't really have that issue. So I think this could be a good era of wrestling coming up. And, you know,
yeah,
Triple H, I don't think, is going to want to drive AEW into the ground. I mean, I think I want to get some payback for NXT, but I don't think he's going to want to put them out of business or anything. I don't see him doing that. Anyway, let me talk about the actual show itself.
And Brian, just so you know, I've got a semi-hard out for the show at midnight Eastern, and we're about a minute from that. So keep it a little concise, because I got to get to the producer.
All right.
Yep.
Just the one main thing I like was the women's tag match. It was really good, you know, and it showed that placing it earlier in the show when the crowd isn't so tired, the crowd was into the entire match. And I thought,
yeah,
you know, overall good wrestling. And, you know, if they can keep building up women's tag teams and divisions and stuff, they can whittle down some of the other belts. So, you know, I can see women's good women's tag team division coming. So I'll just close with that. And you guys have a good night.
Great, Brian. Appreciate it. Yep. I want to read a quick email here, kind of related to what Brian and we were just saying. Shay from Brooklyn said, there's so many interesting stories forming heading into All Out. I really think the show is benefiting from not having to squeeze in a bunch of new wrestlers from New Japan or ROH. I was a fan of those shows too, but the show is noticeably more focused. It just feels more like AEW the last few weeks, highlighting a lot of talent that's been around for a long time. Hobbs has a new theme and entrance. I'm loving his presentation so far. Hook and Ricky Starks got most of the talk last week, but I was also looking forward to where Hobbs goes from here. They've been very patient with them, all of Team Taz, and I'm glad it's their turn to move into the spotlight. Wardlow has a physical presence, unlike a lot of guys on the show. I'm impressed with how well he's doing as a babyface. If he manages to get my one nitpick, Wardlow's world, over, I'll be extra impressed. Yeah, he doesn't look comfortable doing that. And then Hangman and the Bucks on screen together just feels right. We're all ready for the reunion. Great moment tonight. Adam Cole's time his time off really helped refresh him for me. I had a bit of Adam Cole fatigue before his injury, but he was a welcome sight tonight. That's going to be another good feud heading it all out. The Jungle Boy usage tonight was really good too, enjoying this more serious version of him. And also great to hear Yuta continuing to get a lot of support through his matches. They've done well with building him. Overall, a really fun show that pushed a lot of stuff forward. Bruce, quickly here, I want to say I would be okay if Tony Khan told Adam Cole to stop referring to people as boys and girls. It just don't work for me. I don't know what he's going for as a face or a heel. And the story time with Adam Cole, I know they're pretty into that. That's not working for me either. You can comment on that. And then the other kind of closing comment for me is just, yeah, the focus on AEW as opposed to New Japan or ROH, even with Claudio running out there. Because he's an AEW guy, I hope it happens to have an ROH belt. But this is kind of, I think, a homecoming in a way for AEW fans, because they can kind of exhale and go, all right, now we're focused on AEW again. So those are my two main points to throw to you to close on.
Yeah, and I'll be quick. The language thing. So I'm going to bring this back to Jungle Boy, because last week he had some misogynistic comments, and this week his shirt, I don't know if you saw it, but it said Christian is a P word. He doubled down on that. You don't need to devolve to misogyny or homophobia or racism to get a dig in, to get a burn or to draw a rating or draw a pop. So that needs to be taken care of. And I think it's actually hurt Jungle Boy more the last couple of weeks doing this than if he hadn't resorted to those tactics. Excuse me. And then your final comment was on Adam, not Adam Cole, sorry.
The lack of ROH.
ROH. Right. So yeah, ROH will have a presence, of course. And I think what they did tonight is actually a good way to keep ROH in the minds of AEW fans without having them in the show. That kind of breaks the flow of what AEW is, because you saw the vignette with Claudio hyping his match against Takeshita. That's really what you need to do at the occasional themed event, whether it's a pay-per-view or a TV event, a named TV event. Have one of the title matches there. Good. I think it was a great job. Less, like we said, less chaotic, more structured. Good way for AEW to build. Hopefully this maintains after the next pay-per-view as they move into 2023.
Bruce, thank you so much. Check out Bruce on the PWT Talks NXT show and his NXT 2.0 TV reports at pwtorch.com. Anything else you want to close with, Bruce?
You can find me on Twitter at b_lee253. And thank you, Wade. It's been a long time, and I really enjoyed tonight's post show with you. It was really fun to talk wrestling again.
I have too. It was great having Tyler join us, and great job from callers and emailers. And we'll do this again, hopefully quicker than the gap will be smaller than the last gap. I'll put it that way. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you all next time.